Well, we have ordered a few more copies of the story. They did not come in this week, so I apologize if you are waiting for one of those. I was talking to the gal on the phone, and she wanted her address here for the church, and I said, well, the address is Graceway. And she asked me a couple more questions, and she goes, how did you get that name? And about every three sentences, she stopped, and she go, that is such a cool name for a street, for a church. And through the whole conversation, she just couldn't get over that. I don't even know if she got the order in. She was so amazed. What a perfect name to drive into Graceway when you come to church. So I don't know how you got that, but it's a great name. Anyway, if you're reading and you don't have a book, Genesis 37 through 50, if you look through those chapters this next week, you will be on track with everyone. So we hope to get those in this next week. I think that I have seen most of the Star Wars movies. I didn't see the first one. I think I started with the second one. And I remember, you know, since then I've probably seen most of them. And as I watched those movies, especially the second one, I realized I wasn't getting some of the connections. It's like if you missed the first one, you missed, right, what was going on. I knew this guy with this mask named Darth Vader was always coming on the scene, but I never was really sure who he was or what the connections were, and so it went throughout the series. And so I'm not one of those on a rainy Saturday afternoon that's going to do a Star Wars marathon like some people. A good friend of mine at the end of, I think it was the sixth or seventh one in the series, was telling me how in the theater when it was done, he just sat there weeping. I'm just going, I don't get it. I mean, it's entertaining, but I don't really get the connection between everything that's happening. I think a lot of people in life, as we talk about the story, I think for a lot of people, that's how it is. You know, we're all born into the story. A lot happened. We're, you know, in year 2000 AD, there's a lot of the story that's already played out. And so for many of us, you know, it's kind of like walking into a movie late and you're nudging the person next to you. And kind of going, what's going on? Who is that? And how are they related? And why is this happening? And in some ways, it may never fully make sense. That's one of the reasons why I think it's so important to walk through the story. Because we need to see how everything fits from beginning to end. And since we were born into the story, it's important to understand what's gone on before us. For that reason, I'm going to, on Sundays, I'll warn the camera guy back there. I'm gonna kind of walk through the story each week because I want us to get the timeline of the major events that are happening. If you're like me, I'm not a very good trivia person. My worst nightmare is to be on a trivia show. I would go out on the $50 question. My mind doesn't remember. So it was. I just remember going through the story, and it's Rebecca and Sarah and Joseph and Jacob, but trying to figure out where all these people fit in the story. That was difficult for me. So if you're like that, hopefully this will be helpful. And so as we begin the story, let me just walk through. So I'm going to go over here. And so we start with God. We start with a God who is outside the story, who's outside of time, something you and I, as finite beings, cannot understand, an infinite God. But that's where we start. In the beginning, there's already God. In the beginning, there's a God whose plurality in nature. We see that in the very start of the story. So that would be the first thing you need to understand, that there is a God who's outside of creation, an eternal God. Then we see that God creates. So everything around us, that God creates a stage on which he is going to, through the pages of history, he is going to orchestrate a redemptive story. And so this world is that stage which God creates, and it's perfect and it's beautiful because everything that God does is perfect and beautiful. Then we see that man rebels against God, that man decides not to trust God and steps out on his own, and this thing called sin enters the world. The Lord said, when you sin, when you disobey me, he said that you will surely die. And so death comes into the world in terms of separation with God. Man begins to experience the inevitable physical death. And we see there's pain and frustration and anguish among people on the earth. We also see that sin is progressive. And last week we saw that God will judge sin. God must judge sin. God must eliminate that which is painful and chaotic and frustrating because it does not reflect what he does and who he is. And so we saw judgment coming upon the earth. And we ended up with one final theme of the story. And that is, however, even in the midst of judgment, God is doing a redemptive work. God is about rescuing his creation. And so we now, as we come this morning, it's been about 400 years since Noah and his family stepped out of that ark. The world has begun to repopulate, and God is going to begin to, he's going to pick a nation through which he is going to do an amazing work. And so that's where our story is this morning. If you have a Bible, I'd encourage you to open to chapter 12 of Genesis, and we're going to read the first three verses of Genesis chapter 12. It says, "Now the Lord said to Abram, 'Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed.'" Wow, that was quite a promise that God makes. We see here he promises three things. He promises, number one, land. I promise to give you land. That was the first thing. Secondly, I promise to make you a great nation. Of course, he takes Abraham out, tells him to look up on the stars, and he says, "As the stars of the sky, so shall be your descendants." So a great nation with many descendants. And thirdly, he promises Abraham that through that nation, he will bless all the other nations of the earth. So we'll come back to that a little bit later towards the end. So why Abraham? Why did God pick Abraham? You know, we're going to be asking that question throughout the story, because as God, you know, casts the characters in this story, you're going to look at some of the characters and you go, why would God pick someone like that? I think certainly that could be said of Abraham. I mean, he didn't come from the best family. His father was an idol worshiper. In fact, his father made idols for a living. I think the most extreme thing about Abraham is here God is looking to build a nation. Now, if you were looking to cast a character for someone that's going to build a nation, you would think you would pick somebody that was prolific and was able to raise kids. So here he comes to a couple. The guy's 75 years old, his wife is 65 years old, and they've never been able to have children. So this is a couple that you're going to pick to build this great nation with many descendants. But Abraham and Sarah, Abraham heard that word from God, They stepped out in faith. They left Ur where they were living, and they headed out to a place they didn't even know they were going. You know, as you walk through the story, we get the details, but I think we need to take time to think about the emotions of this story. So here they are, they're settled in this pretty large city of the day of Ur, and all of a sudden Abraham comes and says, God spoke to me and we're going to go to a land. And I'm sure Sarah said, well, where are we going? And he said, I don't know. Now, I have learned that doesn't work very well in my home. On one occasion, I surprised Vicky, and I picked her up after work, and I said, hey, I got a little surprise for you. And she didn't know where we were going, and we headed up to Winnipeg. This is when we were up in northern Minnesota. So we went to Winnipeg and went out for supper, and then we drove by, and I said, let's just look at the lobby of this motel. And we walked in. I pulled out a key. I said, we're going to spend the night. She said, I don't have my stuff. I said, don't worry. I packed it all. Yeah, and so we had a great weekend. We got back. She said, honey, thank you for all the work you went to for this weekend. Don't you ever do that to me again. And so here's this couple. They are heading out, and I can only imagine that perhaps they had those kinds of conversations. I mean, sometimes maybe we kind of put these people up and think, oh, Abraham and Sarah, they were such people of faith. They just followed God. I think there were many times, like you and I, when God calls and we wonder if we've made a mistake and we wonder if God's going to be faithful. And so we see them very early on. They step out, and first thing you know, they're in a famine. So they head down to Egypt, and Abraham has his conversation. Say, you know what, Sarah, you're very beautiful. That's why I married you. But in this culture we're going into, they're going to see you, and somebody's going to walk up and say, hey, get rid of Abraham because I want his wife. And so if you would just kindly tell people that you're my sister, it would probably help save my own skin here. And so certainly, as we know, that's what happened. And Pharaoh found out that this beautiful woman had come down. And she said, well, I'm Abraham. It's not my husband. I'm his sister. And Pharaoh took her into her court. You can imagine the trauma of that for a woman. And that happened twice over the course of their lives. Probably the most difficult thing was that 10 years later, after this promise, there were still no children. Sarah still could not have a child. And so we see that she sat down with Abraham and said, Abraham, this isn't happening. I think, in essence, she didn't say this, but she basically said, you know, that thing God said he was going to do, he's not coming through. I think he needs our help. And so I think what you should do is you should sleep with one of my maidservants, Hagar, and have a child through her, because I'm obviously not going to be able to provide this for you. Which was not uncommon in that day, but Abraham went ahead and slept with Hagar. She became pregnant. She began to bear a child, and every time Sarah looked at Hagar and that baby growing in her womb, she grew more and more resentful. Every time she looked at her, she was reminded that she couldn't have children. She was reminded that her husband and Hagar were having this child together. And the tension grew in that family. And you can read the story. It gives us a few details, but let me tell you, the tension was far, far greater than the details that we hear in the story. It turned out to be a nightmare, and Sarah came, having been the one initiating the idea, came and said to Abraham, Abraham, this is your fault. This is your fault that now I feel this way, and I'm sure that those tensions went on throughout the entire time. It didn't end when the child was born. And so Ishmael came, and there was still the resentment, and Sarah treated her very poorly, to the point where she ran into the desert, and it's another whole story of how that all played out. We see eventually that at 99 years of age, God shows up in Abraham's life and announces to Abraham that the time has come. The time has come that he hasn't forgotten, that I guess evidently he had a plan all along, that evidently God didn't need Abraham and Sarah's help. Abraham is at an age where he's at that stage where you're writing out, you're living well, you're near the end of your life. And now he's going to start this family. His wife is almost 90. And when the angel told him, it says Abraham fell down in his face and he laughed. He was falling down before God, but he was laughing under his breath because it's like, look, I'm almost 100-year-old man. My wife's 90, and now we're going to have a child? And Sarah laughed. And the next year at that time, interesting, the angel said, is anything too hard for God? That's a good question to remember in your life. Is anything too hard for God? And Isaac was born. And the tensions continued in that family between Ishmael and Isaac, and in a few moments we'll see that we're still living that story today. One of the most interesting experiences, one of the most important experiences in the life of this couple and this family was what happened one day when Abraham got up and God said, I want you to take this son that you've been waiting for all these years, this miraculous birth, this one through whom all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed, and I want you to take that son and I want you to sacrifice him up on the mountain. I just don't know how Abraham handled that. I think how he handled that was, we get some hints in the story that he thought, okay, we're going to go there. Two options. One is God is going to provide an alternative lamb. And when Isaac said, Dad, where's the sacrifice? By the way, Abraham didn't tell Isaac what was going to happen. Would you tell your son that? Isaac said, Dad, where's the sacrifice? And Abraham says, God will provide the sacrifice. So he either thought God would provide the sacrifice, or as it says in Hebrews, it says that so great was the faith of Abraham that he actually believed that if he sacrificed his son, that God would raise him from the dead. And so somehow Abraham, in preparing his mind for what God had called him to do, just assumed that God was somehow not going to actually ultimately end the life of this one through whom he was going to give him many descendants. So we read these words in Genesis 22. You'll see it up there on the wall. He said, take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love. I mean, those phrases, take your son, your only son, whom you love. Those are several reasons why you wouldn't do this. And go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering, as one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. And so Abraham goes, his son is carrying the wood on his back, the wood that he will be laid upon as on the altar. They go up the mountain, the two of them, and Abraham's looking around, and I'm sure he's waiting for something to happen, for God to intervene, and there's no other sacrifice there, there's no alternative, and he puts his son on the altar and he raises that knife. I just can't imagine being at that place and that time. And as he's standing there, God twice says his voice. I think the first time God just yelled at him, like, Abraham! And Abraham stops, Abraham. And at that point, we see the lamb in the thicket. God provides a sacrifice, and his son is spared. Incredible story. Incredible faith that characterized the life of this man, Abraham. Well, the story continues on. Eventually, Isaac grows, Sarah dies, Isaac marries Rebecca, then Abraham dies, then Isaac and Rebecca have problems having children for like 20 years. They can't have a child. And then they have twins. Two twins, as maybe you remember the story, they were almost, the sense is they were fighting in the womb as to who would get out first. And Esau comes out first, and Jacob comes out with his hand on his heel. And that contention would continue to be lived out over the course of their lives. We have the story of Jacob tricking his father and getting the blessing. And yet it's part of the story that God's writing, because it's through the line of Jacob, not Esau, that God is going to bless. And so we see in the story the tension in these stories, and we see Ishmael, and we see out of him we have all the Arab nations, and then we're going to see Esau with Iraq and Turkey and those nations, and we're going to see this contention didn't end back there. We're living in the story today. The Jewish people and the tensions that still exist that go way back to this story. Well, Jacob marries sisters Leah and Rachel, and with Rachel, they have 12 boys, the 12 tribes of Israel. So there you have that progression. We have Sarah, Abraham having Isaac, Isaac and his wife Rebekah. They have the twins, Jacob and Esau, and through Jacob, the 12 sons are born. And out of those 12 sons, we will track the growth of a great nation that God is building in the Jewish nation. Next week, we're going to focus on one of those boys, and that boy will be Joseph. So, wow, that's a lot. That's a lot to cover. It's a lot that we just walked through. So let me mention just some things as we reflect upon this story, some observations that I would just invite you to think about. Number one, God is very involved in the story. God is very, you know, as you begin to look at this, you see how intricately God is involved in the story. There's something called deism. It's a form of belief. Some of our founding fathers were deists. There are many people down through the centuries that have been deists. And deists believe this. They don't believe that God has revealed to us. They wouldn't believe this is the word, inspired word of God. But what they would believe is this. Through logic and reason, anybody should be able to see that there's a God. I mean, you can't look at the design in the world and come to the conclusion that there isn't an intelligent designer, that there isn't a God who has somehow designed all this. So they believe that. They would say, oh, I believe in God. I believe he created the earth. I believe that he is responsible for all the amazing things that we see on the earth. But that's it. God created. God stepped back. It's our deal. That God doesn't intervene in the affairs of man and in the world. Well, when you read through the story, That's not an option. I mean, God is incredibly, as you look at this, God is incredibly involved here in the story. And he is continually setting up situations that will not work unless he's involved. I mean, he's making it very obvious that he's involved. So here's an example today. He picks a couple who can't have children, who are way too old to have children, and he picks them so that he will demonstrate beyond the shadow of a doubt that God is going to intervene here, that God is writing the story. And so God is continually involved. He's continually setting up those situations. Fiery furnaces, where people could never survive without intervention from God. People in lions' dens with lions who could never survive. Armies that have no chance of winning that rout their enemy. Little shepherd boys taking on giants. 5 loaves and 2 fishes feeding thousands and thousands of people. You think about it, there's just continual scenario after scenario where if God doesn't intervene, if God isn't involved, it's not going to happen. So, first thing we see, God is very involved in the story. Another observation is that the story gets really messy. You look at Abraham and Sarah, they obviously didn't do everything perfectly. They made a number of mistakes here. There are very few, I don't say this negatively, but there are very few perfect James Dobson families in the story. There is a lot of sin involved. There's a lot of brokenness. There's a lot of mess. And God steps into those messes, and God is working in the midst of those messes. I mean, if you were to put the whole Bible in a movie, it would have to be R-rated. I mean, think about it. Some of the things that happen. And by the way, just because you read of something happening doesn't necessarily mean God is pleased with it. You know, sometimes people read things, and the Bible just tells it like it is. And so just because it's there doesn't mean God always approves of it. We see God at work here in the midst of it. And just because it's messy doesn't mean that God isn't at work. You know, I want to say that for your life as well. Maybe your life is kind of messy. God will work in the middle of messes. We have many, many examples of that throughout the scripture, that God works in the mess of the story. But here's the thing I want to end on this morning and just have you think about. Not only did God create everything, not only is God writing out a story, but we see that God is making promises, and we're going to call them covenants. God is a covenant-making God. And a covenant is something, it's a relational promise that you make for the good, for the benefit of the parties involved. And so we see here that throughout the Bible, God is making covenants with people that he created. And all of the covenants are to bless. All of the covenants are to do good. All of the covenants are relational. So we have the covenant to Adam and the covenant to Noah. And with the rainbow, God said, I'm making this promise. I'll never destroy the earth in this way again. We have a covenant made with David. We have the new covenant that we'll see as we get to that coming up. And here we have the covenant with Abraham. Some covenants are more conditional. Others are more unconditional. We see the Mosaic covenant, probably one of the most familiar, the covenant that God made with the people of Israel. We have the Ten Commandments and God's covenant with Israel, which we would consider more of a conditional covenant, and then we have this covenant with Abraham. And as you read that, as we read that, it wasn't so much, well, Abraham, if you will do this, then I will do this. God came to Abraham and said, Abraham, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make you a promise. I'm going to bless you. And he gives a very unconditional. Abraham simply steps out and believes in faith. So here's the point I think we need to see, that there are a lot of things God is demonstrating through the story. The most preeminent thing that God is demonstrating is that he has a desire to bless, he has a desire to demonstrate the extent of his love and his grace to those he has created. If you don't catch that about the story, you're not going to catch the essence of the story, that God is demonstrating an everlasting love. And so when God promises this to Abraham, when he makes this covenant with Abraham, that's for today. God made that covenant as an everlasting covenant with the people of Israel. God is not removed from his creation. God is not removed from your life. God is seeking to reveal himself in relational covenant with us as his people. This story that we read is our story. And if you're in covenant relationship with God, and we'll get into that more as we get into the story, how God, through Israel, is going to be inviting all nations into covenant. It's not just Israel that is invited into covenant with God. It is through Israel that this covenant will be extended to all the peoples of the earth. And so we see that God has been faithful. He said to Israel, I will bless you with land. I mean, it's incredible. That little piece of land in the Middle East gets more press, more attention, probably besides the U.S. in terms of news around the world. Israel is at the forefront. And they still have that land. They still have that place. 15 million Jews approximately in the world. Less than half in the area of Israel. The rest spread around through the other nations. And God has preserved that piece of land for those people. Why? Because he promised that he would give them land. We see that God says, I will bless you as a nation. God has blessed the Jewish nation. There are the number one country for business startups in the world is the United States. We have about 350, 400 million people. Do you know what the second most prolific nation for business startups is? It's Israel. Of all the nations, God has blessed them. They've made many, many, many contributions. In fact, since 1900, they've given out about 900 Nobel honors to different nations. The Jewish nation, Jewish people have received almost 200 of them. That's this nation that's 0.25% of the world has received 22% of all Nobel Peace Prizes. And God has blessed that nation. God has blessed them. And the promise that he made, he said, those who dishonor you, I will curse. Those that bless you, I will bless. That was a covenant. That was an eternal promise. That is, it was in effect back in the days of Israel. It is in effect in the day in which you and I live. I will bless you as a nation. We see here that God continues to bless and protect Israel. I don't know how many of you remember what happened in 1967. How many remember what happened in 1967 with the Jewish nation? Okay, a few of you remember that. It was June 5th, about 2 weeks earlier. Egypt and the Arab nations all around there, Lebanon, Jordan, Syria, Egypt, they blocked off the shipping lanes to Israel. They made a statement that war was inevitable and everybody was ready for the fight. And on June 5th, they began what was called the Six-Day War. Israel was so outnumbered. I mean, it's like reading back another story in the Old Testament. They were so outnumbered. And they took off. They sent all 200 of their planes in the air. I think it was 7:30 in the morning. They went out, and the Egyptian Air Force had changed the coding frequency, and it somehow didn't get communicated. All of the MiG jets in Cairo were on the ground for 1 hour. They had put them all down for some reason for 1 hour, and it was in that hour that Israel attacked. And by the time the afternoon came, they destroyed 90% of all the Arabs' air force. All of their fighting capacity, 90%, was destroyed on the ground. The anti-aircraft missiles were not working on the planes. Israel lost, I think, but one plane. There are story after story after story of chaos coming into the Arab armies and turning and running in retreat and being killed by the Israeli forces. In Shechem, they opened up the gates and invited them, the whole Israeli army, somehow thinking they were Iraqis. They captured the whole city without even a shot. Story after story of God intervening. And when the conflict was done 6 days later, Israelis had lost 800 men. Arabian nations had lost 20,000. And so God continues this covenant promise, this everlasting promise to his people to protect. We see that his hand is upon his people. Well, let me conclude with just one other promise. It says here in the text that through Israel, all the nations of the world will be blessed. Through Israel, all the nations. That's always been the goal. God's goal was not just to take the Jewish nation and just simply to bless them and not other peoples and not other nations. God has always told Israel, I am choosing you for the purpose of blessing all the nations of the earth through you. And as we see in the story, it is through the promise of a descendant of this Jewish nation that this blessing is going to come upon all the nations of the earth. And there is going to be a new covenant, a new promise, not made just to Israel. Jeremiah 31, I just want to read this for you as we close here. Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel, the house of Judah, not like the covenant I made with their fathers on the day when I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt. My covenant that they broke, though I was their husband, declares the Lord. For this is a covenant I will make with the house of Israel after those days, declares the Lord. I will put my law within them. I will write it on their hearts. I will be their God. They shall be my people. And no longer shall each one teach his neighbor and each his brother, saying, know the Lord. For they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, declares the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. And God is going to redefine that covenant promise in terms of a spiritual Israel. Those who are God's people through faith in the sacrifice that God will send. And so this covenant is going to become available not just to the Jewish nation, but to you and to I and to all who by faith become God's people. Let me just conclude with Genesis 15, verse 17. This is a covenant that God made with Aversa, the covenant that God made with Israel. The late R.C. Sproul has said that this is his favorite verse in all the Bible. So what do you think of that? When the sun had gone down, it was dark. Behold, a smoking fire pot and a flaming torch passed between the pieces. In Genesis 15, Abraham is brought out by God, and he is told to sacrifice a number of animals. Their bodies are cut into pieces, and they're strewn side by side with a walkway between them. And what Abraham realizes is happening is that God is setting up a covenant ceremony. That's what they would do. A greater king and maybe a lesser king or a prince would get together and they'd make a covenant. If they made a covenant to each other, they would sacrifice animals. And then what they would do is one of them would walk through. And by walking through, he was symbolically agreeing to the covenant and saying, if I break the covenant, so be it unto me as these animals on both sides of me. Now, usually both parties would walk through in making that covenant. Sometimes the greater king would not walk through, the lesser would always walk through. But in this case, something very, very unusual happens. In Genesis 15, you can read that story sometime. Abraham is put in a deep sleep. And God alone, walks through those torn and broken pieces. And in essence, God was saying, if I don't fulfill this covenant, then so be it unto me. And if we don't fulfill this covenant, so be it unto me. Remember the story of Isaac? Just fast forward. I think you'll remember the story. A beloved son, an only son, who carried the wood on his back and was brought as a sacrifice. And in that place and in that time, the nails were lifted and the hammers were lifted, but this time there would be no alternate sacrifice. And God himself, that smoking fire, that flaming torch, those are right out of Mount Sinai. The smoking fire represented the pillar of cloud by day, and the torch was that fire by night. This was the presence of God that passed through and said, I will take full responsibility for this covenant. As we'll see in the climax of this story, there will come a day when God will take upon himself the sins of you and I and the sins of the entire world. Father, we thank you for this story, and we begin to see the intricacy, and we begin to see the wonder of these events that maybe for us down here in the lower story are almost confusing. And yet they're not confusing. They are ordained. They are designed. They are things that are using to foreshadow what you are doing in the story. And so today we are reminded that you have made this covenant with your people, that you have taken responsibility for that. That is by your work alone. And so we are just grateful for the privilege that we have to be in this story. Father, I pray that you would speak to any hearts of people who are outside of this story. Or maybe not so much outside of this story, but outside of your covenant, outside of your everlasting love, outside of your forgiveness through Christ. Father, just use this story in each of our lives. We thank you for it. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. If you have a gift you'd like to share, there are baskets at the rear. Or you can do that online. And again, thank you for coming out. I encourage you to remember the story is still being written. And we are all part of that story. Thank you. Have a good day.